This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks for kicking off your weekend with us here on The Drive with Rob Brenton. Sports Machine, Sean Levine taking you up until 6 o'clock, being heard on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and all over the world on the radio.com app. It's time to be joined by our Royals insider, my good friend Josh Vernier is on The Drive. What's up, Vern? How you living, man?
I'm all right, Sean. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Vern, before we kind of talk about Major League Baseball's plan, I haven't dove too deep into it, but what the hell's going on at the minor league level right now where a bunch of guys seemingly out of nowhere just kind of losing their gigs?
Well, a lot of the players that lost their jobs yesterday would have lost their jobs at the end of spring training as minor league teams are put together, and sometimes there's just not enough roster spots for as many bodies that ultimately show up at spring training. It's just not normally all on one day that we see in mass that number of ball players lose their jobs like they did yesterday. But the good news being today, as we just heard in the update, the Royals deciding they're not going to release anyone. I'll tell you what, the culture that has been built by first Mr. Kauffman and then, you know, Dayton Moore, where he has taken it. I remember Mr. Glass saying that John Sherman reminded him of Mr. Kauffman. Boy, oh boy, the combination of Dayton Moore and Mr. Sherman so far are acing this first test and not only taking care of their employees, but no furloughs. And then we find out today, no releases for anyone in the minor league system. So a banner day to be a Royals fan.
That's so badass. So just to get clear, there are a bunch of other teams that are either letting their players go or furloughing them, or in the case of the Oakland A's, they basically just said, sorry, we're not going to pay our minor leaguers because we don't have the money right now. The Royals and their brass have decided amongst themselves that they're not going to do that.
Right. I believe it's about $400 a week for each minor leaguer. In total, Jeff Passan put it together that to pay minor leaguers throughout the rest of what would have been the minor league baseball season will cost an organization a grand total of $1 million. Now, I'm not one to poo-poo $1 million. And we all understand just how wealthy someone like John Sherman and the rest of the ownership group is. We also note that you don't buy a team to sell it within 5 years. So John Sherman and the rest of the ownership group likely will make their money back. The windfall of Major League Baseball will return in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. John Sherman will be just fine. And then we'll also bring up that the city is likely going to build him a stadium over the next 15 years. So he's still a smart businessman, and he'll walk away a lot wealthier than he came back to Kansas City as. But still, to do this in these uncertain times deserves a big thumbs up and more good news as far as the ownership of this organization moving forward.
Vern, just curious, where do you personally stand? Because you're one of the more trusted, more respected baseball voices in Kansas City, certainly. Where do you stand on this whole owners versus players? And I don't want to say versus fans, but what it comes down to is the infighting between those other two entities ends up screwing the fans the most. Not necessarily having to take the owner's side or the player's side, but where do you stand on what's going on with baseball right now?
Well, I stand with the players. They're not really fighting. If you go back and follow how this entire offseason, and if you want to call it negotiations between the two sides, if you follow it from the beginning, it's very, very difficult to view the owners as anything other than the heavy in all of this. Because look, back in March, the players, who keep in mind, have a legal binding contract. Let's take Salvador Perez. Okay, Salvador Perez is due $15 million. That is in his contract, that for the year 2020, the Royals will pay him $15 million. They owe him $15 million, but he agreed. He and the rest of the players agreed. We will not sue the owners for full compensation of these contracts. We will not sue you so long as you promise us prorated salaries, meaning if we play 82 games, you'll give us 50% of our salaries. Mm-hmm. We won't sue you for every last dime if you promise to give us prorated salaries. Both sides agreed to that.
And Vern, real quick, and they agreed on that, what, the last time that they did the collective bargaining agreement?
They agreed to that at the end of when spring training was canceled, and they were discussing how and when baseball can restart.
Okay.
This was right around March 26th.
Okay.
This was the agreement that the two sides came to, that if and when baseball can restart, these will be our guidelines to it. 6 weeks later, the owners floated to the media, or leaked to the media, the idea of a salary cap, basically, right? A 50-50 revenue split. So they leaked that to the media, and the players hear this, and they're thinking, no, we didn't agree to this. Although, the way that it's interpreted by some fans is if it's the baseball players saying, no, we don't want to play baseball under those rules, which couldn't be further from the truth. Players want to play under their original agreement. So after the salary cap is leaked by the owners again leak this ridiculous pay cut that you guys discussed earlier in the week. And once again, the players are in a position where, to the common fan, it seems as if players are saying no to baseball, when all they're saying is stop changing the agreement to the owners.
Vern, do you think that it's as far apart as I've read it to be and you're making it sound? Because the way that Max Scherzer came out yesterday with his statement, and it seems like the owner's not really willing to budge. I mean, something's got to happen here in the next couple of weeks, or at some point we're going to talk about not having a baseball season.
Yeah, you would think so. Yes, I do believe there is as much distrust as you're hearing, as you're inferring from these tweets. But that distrust has gone on for decades between the players and the owners. But I'll say this. If the testing becomes available, and it's still not, even if both sides right now agreed to finances, even if the owners were willing to go along with the prorated salaries, it's not as if spring training would start up right now. I personally don't believe that Major League Baseball is in any worse position than the NBA or the NHL. Look, the NHL has a plan to return. The NBA seems a lot less animus between the owners and the players. But look, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball all face the exact same impediments right now. And that impediment is adequate testing, reliable testing, and then the virus allowing the sport to be played safely. And right now, those three hurdles are yet to be cleared. So until I see any unionized sports back on the field or courts, I'm not going to panic too much about baseball, because right now, the virus wouldn't allow us to return, even if both sides were agreeing to everything.
Yeah, I'm glad you explained this. I think there's a lot of people that think, well, as soon as they come to an agreement, they're going to be back on the field, and that's just not the case. We're talking with Vern here on the drive. Before you get out of here, I guess I would ask you this. Don't you think they're actually in a different boat, though, than the NHL and the NBA? Because both those leagues have, what's the word I'm looking for, a roof that they play under. And baseball, they're going to have to deal with weather. And the longer that this thing goes, and if there's any sort of rain delays or just normal stuff that happens throughout the season, I mean, they can't just be playing baseball in December and January.
Right. Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Yes. You would think, look, the old saying is deadlines make deals, and we don't have a hard deadline when it comes to Major League Baseball. Many people want to point to June 10th. If you want to allow a two-week spring training and then get this thing started by the middle of July. Look, in my opinion, I think somewhere in the middle to late June, that would be a hard deadline. I don't think finances will be the reason. I'll put it that way. I don't think finances will be the reason why baseball doesn't return. It'll either be the virus or, as you're correctly pointing out, the calendar won't allow it.
Vern, you're the best, man. Keep yourself safe. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
That's our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, on the drive. Just scary to think that both sides can't get along, and then it just keeps getting longer and longer, and these other sports seem to have a plan, and baseball, it seems like there's just no give right now. Always good to hear from Vern. You can hear from him again, actually, coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour if you want to be a contestant on Pick a Player. Now, that's a fun game, but it's not quite as fun as going inside the mind of the machine, which we do next right here on the drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
What's good in the neighborhood? Thanks for starting your weekend off with me and my boy Rob. It's The Drive here on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and being heard all over the world on the radio.com app. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we will take a trip around the NFL, and Forbes' list of richest athletes from 2019 is officially out, and not only are you going to be pretty surprised who's number one, I think you're going to be surprised where Patrick Mahomes, in fact, I know you're going to be surprised where Patrick Mahomes ranked on this list. But before all that fun, Rob, let's step inside the mind of the machine. To be honest, Rob, the mind of the machine is still a little foggy from my camping trip last weekend, so let's audible on the fly and change it up to one gotta go. Playground games. Capture the flag, Red Rover, Foursquare, Tetherball. One gotta go.
Ooh. I'm gonna get rid of Tetherball. Because, honestly, I never played it that much as a kid. In my elementary school, they had taken the pole down when I was, like, in second grade. So, it was, like, a game I never played. I'm aware how to play, but without any childhood experience, I'm going to get rid of it.
First of all, you're 8 feet tall, so you had an advantage in tetherball.
I wasn't 8 feet tall until recently.
You would have you had a growth spurt when you were 27 years old?
I had a growth spurt in college. It was a nightmare.
Weirdo. Tetherball is great as long as you're somewhere between the age of, say, you know, 6 and 12, and then there's really another tetherball pole. Why'd they take down the pole?
I don't know. They didn't confer with me, the
people
second grader.
A stripper's pole or a Festivus pole? Or
the second grader did not get the breakdown from the administration.
I'm getting rid of Red Rover. Honestly, it hurts your arms. Like, yeah, you could lock arms really well, and the big guy comes running through, and all of a sudden he clotheslines himself, and you win, but you really lose because you got that rug burn on your arm for the next week and a half. And Foursquare is a classic, and Tetherball is great, and Capture the Flag is probably the best, so I got to get rid of Red Rover. Baseball movies, one got to go. Rookie of the Year, Major League, League of Their Own, The Sandlot.
Ooh, that's a really good one because all four of those movies are really good. I guess, this is for me what I want to watch. I guess I'll get rid of The Sandlot from that grouping just because I feel like as I get older, I kind of like it less and less, so I'll get rid of it. But that's a really good, I mean, it's just the weakest of a strong four.
Here's the thing about One Gotta Go. There's not an incorrect, like, there's not a wrong answer, except you just gave a wrong answer. The Sandlot? That's the best of all. It's not even close. And it's the opposite of how you described it. It gets better with time. Like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, if you watch that as an adult, it's kind of like, a little more weird than entertaining. Sandlot's great. Rookie of the Year is the one you're describing, where if you watch it as an adult, you're like, what? The kid broke his arm, and then all of a sudden, like, that didn't happen. It's in Major League, I think, withstands the test of time. Major League 2 wasn't that good. It was all right. League of Their Own, no crying in baseball. I'm getting rid of Rookie of the Year. Too unrealistic. No disrespect to Henry Roden Gardner, but way too unrealistic. Bodies of water, Rob. One got to go. The lake,
okay.
The ocean, a river, a pool. One got to go.
When you say river, do you mean like the Missouri River or just like any river?
I mean, if you can grab a cooler and grab one of those floaty things and attach it to your friend and float down it, then it's the river I'm talking about. Does that help you?
So if that's where we're counting, then the lake can go. The pool is excellent.
What do you think? I was talking about the mighty Mississippi?
That's what I was clarifying. The river's strong because a float trip.
Great time. Yeah.
That's the only time I enjoy camping, and it might be because there's so many adult beverages had on the water that who even knows where I fall asleep.
I feel bad because my boy C-Dot always talks about he's never done a pontoon boat, and he's never jet skied or water skied or any of that. And since he's, not a very good swimmer, he probably shouldn't. I wouldn't suggest like the float trip, but it's just so much fun.
It's a great time.
So much fun.
And then pool is great, and ocean has a beach. So yeah. Lake can go.
Ocean has a beach. Rob, this broadcasting school is really paying off.
Mm-hmm.
Lake water is kind of nasty depending on the lake that you're in, but you can really say the same thing about all these bodies of water, except for a nice private pool. I'm not talking about the neighborhood pool. I'm not talking about the public pool. I'm talking about your rich aunt's pool with the slide in her backyard, with the hot tub and the whole nine. That's pretty good living. So that's not going anywhere. The ocean's great because, like Rob said, the ocean has a beach.
I mean, it's so simple. The beach is elite, man.
The ocean has a beach, the man said.
Give me a beach all day.
And the river you float down. It's probably a lake now that I think about it. I mean, and the lake's great, but it's got to go. Major cities, one got to go.
All right.
Have you been to Denver?
I have been to Denver.
Have you been to Chicago?
I have.
Have you been to Dallas?
I actually went to Dallas recently.
Okay, and have you been to Phoenix?
I have been to Phoenix.
Okay, well, then you can compete in this game. One got to go.
So Chicago's obviously staying. I had an excellent time in Chicago. There's so much to do. Great town. Dallas is the same way. Just so much to do. Such a fun time. So it's between Phoenix and Denver. And it just comes down to that extreme heat you deal with in Phoenix. But
I mean, do you want the heat or do you want the weed?
And I'm not a big skier too. I'm gonna get rid of Denver only because like the mountain activities aren't my jam, and that's a big portion of what Denver is.
Yeah, no, Denver's great. Not only is it close proximity, and as I mentioned, they got very friendly laws, but the mountains are great. Whether you're skiing or tubing or snowboarding or just enjoying the scenery, Chicago's awesome too. Chicago's probably my favorite major city. So to me, it comes down to Dallas and Phoenix. My sister lives in Phoenix, so it's going to be tough to say that they got to go, but they got to go because Dallas is just a better city. And Phoenix is really spread out. Nothing against Phoenix, but people want to talk about they live in Phoenix or Tempe or Scottsdale or Mesa and pretend like it's the same thing. No, that's like living in Kansas City and Des Moines.
Yeah, it's not that bad, but it reminds me of Kansas City in the way. Because you get down there, like, yeah, we're in Phoenix. And then you meet someone, they're like, oh, we live in, Scottsdale or Surprise or Peoria. And they sell out-of-towners Phoenix. Same way if you live in Lee Summit, you would say Kansas City if
that's
you're out of town.
That's my only knock on Kansas City is that we say we live in Kansas City if you live in Liberty or if you live in Leawood, and that's like a 40-minute drive with traffic. And I'm sure you could live even further apart and still claim Kansas City. That's my only beef with it is that it's super spread out. One got to go, Rob. Worlds of Fun rides.
Are these active ones or is the Zambezi Zinger on this list?
Well, you know the Zambezi. These are all
all-time rides.
These are all defunct. These are all no longer with us.
All right.
Well, actually, Zambezi Zinger is technically still with us in South America.
Yes, it exists. It does not with us in Kansas City.
It's not
City.
With us here, and it's renamed, but it still exists, believe it or not. One got to go. You know the Zinger's on there. Orient Express. Do you know what the Omegatron is?
I do not know.
It's those two hammer-looking things that went upside down, side by side.
Oh, yeah, I've seen rides like that.
And the Dolphin Show, which it doesn't matter if you went to the Dolphin Show. You know what a Dolphin Show is. Yeah. One got to go.
I'm getting rid of the Dolphin Show. As an adult, a dolphin show in Kansas City is just sad for the animal. I would just sit there and watch and just feel bad. This poor animal is out of its comfort zone in this tiny pool in Kansas City. There's a part of me that would ache for those dolphins. Dolphin show can go. Plus, I love roller coasters.
I didn't ask which is the least humane. I asked which one you miss the most or the least, or I said one
dolphin
guy.
Dolphin show.
As long as
the
you
one
don't
I
say Zambezi Zinger.
And I like roller coasters. The other three are roller coasters, and then one's just watching dolphins. That can go.
It is. That's the correct answer. Dolphin show can go. One got to go, Rob. Ozarks activities. Not on the water. Mini golf. Go-karts. The old-time family photo. You know what I'm talking about. Or a bonfire. One got to go.
I'm so happy the nasty pool party was not on your list.
No.
That's the easiest one got to go ever. I'm probably going to get rid of old-timey photo. But I'm on the fence about getting rid of go-karts because every once in a while you get a go-kart that stinks and it's got the governor and you can't get it going and it's not a good time if you have the one bad cart on the track. But I'm going to get rid of old-timey photo.
I always get that cart that you're describing and it's BS because I get lapped by my nieces and nephews.
And it makes it a lot less fun.
A lot less fun. And I can't remember, what's the name of that indoor track that they have here in Kansas City? Do you know what I'm talking about, the indoor go-kart track?
Yeah, it's the one the morning show did some up there, didn't they?
They booted me last time I was there because apparently you're not supposed to throw the one-gun salute. You're not supposed to flip somebody off when they pass you, and I did.
May have been on you.
They kindly removed me. All right, one more. One got to go. Skydiving, bungee jumping, parasailing, zip lining. One got to go.
Okay, so I have parasailed before, and it's a lot of fun.
Me and Rob actually looked earlier today what the odds of dying while parasailing are. How many zeros were there?
Six? There were six zeros.
So it's 0.000004 are the chances that one would die parasailing. So, give it a shot if you want to.
So parasailing I'm in for, what was it, bungee jumping, parasailing,
skydiving.
I think bungee jumping is actually the least safe of all those. So I'll get rid of bungee jumping, and you have to be face down, so the blood rush to your head just seems uncomfortable. Skydiving, you could at least spread your arms. There's a parachute. The safety is better. And then I've parasailed, and it's a great time, and I've ziplined, and it's a great time. So, I'm going to get rid of the bungee jump.
The thing that scares me about all these is what happens if in the middle of it, you just decide this isn't for me, or you decide I'm going to vomit, or you decide that my stomach's dropping so bad that I'm about to pass out. Like, if you're on a zip line, once they push you, sorry, dog. Like, I don't really care how you feel until the zip line ends. You're on this thing. And I would say the same thing for all of these things. The bungee jump at least ends the quickest. So if it sucks for like 5-10 seconds, however long it lasts. And then essentially, like you said, it's uncomfortable and you bounce up and down. But then it's over with. Parasailing, correct me if I'm wrong, because you've done it. You didn't have like a walkie-talkie or anything. You weren't like in communication with the boat.
There is. You really can't hear anything up there. It's kind of nice. It's kind of scary, too.
Yeah, no, I want nothing to do with that one either. I'm getting rid of all these. Yeah, I'm good. I don't want to do any of that
stuff.
Have you
ever, you're a Vegas guy, ever ziplined in Vegas?
I've seen it.
Never done it?
I've enjoyed watching other people zipline. No, hell no. Not only do I not want to do that, you know those rides that are on top of the stratosphere?
Oh, yeah, sign me up for that. I'm in. I would go to Vegas just for that. I'm not going to lie to you.
So the stratosphere is the tallest building west of the Mississippi. I stayed there one time. I did some research, so I found that out. Tallest building west of the Mississippi. Anybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, I'll describe it for you. Y'all know the detonator at Worlds of Fun, which is basically like a giant stick that all it does is you go up and down and up and down, and that's the whole ride. Your stomach drops. It's probably like, how tall do you think it is? 200 feet?
A couple hundred feet up? Yeah, detonator's probably like 200 feet, yeah.
There's a detonator on top of the building that I was saying is the tallest building west of the Mississippi. Think about that. On top of the building. Yeah, no. I'm good on that. I don't care how safe it is. I don't care if it's 0.00000004% of people fly off that thing. I'm good. That's Rob. I'm the sports machine. Coming up next, Forbes came out with their list of 100 richest athletes from last year. So what they did is they combined the salary plus the endorsements. You're going to be really surprised who's number one. And trust me, you're going to be even more surprised when I tell you where Patrick Mahomes landed on this list. I'll tell you coming up next on The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
So a couple of days ago when the NHL decided that they would have 24 of their 31 teams in the playoffs, I spent way too much time talking about a sport that I don't know very much about, saying that it was a dumb idea, a bad idea. I think I called him ignorant and short-sighted and a bunch of other stuff. And then I thought, well, maybe that's what the NBA should do. Because if the NBA, if there's any way they can get Trae Young in the playoffs and Zion in the playoffs, that's probably the way to do it. So we'll talk about that in the NBA's reentry plan coming up at about 4:15. Before that, top of the 4 o'clock hour, your chance to be a contestant on Pick a Player going up against our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, coming up in about 10 minutes. Rob's going to take us on a trip around the NFL. But Forbes came out with their annual list of the highest paid athletes in the world. So sometimes when these lists come out, we always think United States. You always go right to like LeBron James and Mike Trout and our athletes. And then we have to think, oh yeah, there's other things like golf and Formula One and I don't know, the most popular sport in the world, soccer. So the list came out and I thought, all right, I'm curious where some guys are. I'm kind of curious where a guy like Tom Brady ranks at this point in his career. The way these lists come about are they combine your salary, so whatever you get paid by your team, plus whatever endorsements you make, they add up those two numbers, and that's where you fall on the list. At number one, so this is for last year, 2019, the highest paid athlete in the world was, wait for it, drumroll please, Roger Federer. What? Roger Federer? I'm not saying he isn't great and good looking and plays a popular sport that transcends pretty much every country, but Roger Federer? Really? He made $106 million last year. Think about that. Roger Federer made $106 million last year. So then I thought, all right, I'll move on. Number two, Ronaldo. Pardon me. I should have rolled my eyes.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
All right. We know how popular soccer is worldwide, how big these guys' deals are, all the endorsements overseas. That's not that surprising. Messi comes in at number three to prove my point. Neymar comes in at number four. So far, we're talking about the world's richest athletes. We're not talking about any Americans until we get to number five and number six and number seven, and they're all NBA players. LeBron comes in at number five, Steph Curry comes in at number six, and Kevin Durant comes in at number seven. I can't say that I'm surprised either that those guys are all in the top 10 or that it goes in that order. If you would have asked me what NBA players are making the most bank, maybe I would have thrown James Harden's name in there because I know how big his Adidas contract is, but it doesn't surprise me that LeBron's the fifth highest paid athlete in the world last year, Steph comes in at number six, and then at number seven, Kevin Durant. I guess what surprised me a little bit is that they're all above number eight, which is Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, I would say, is probably the most recognizable current athlete on the planet. I'm trying to think. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's Floyd Mayweather. Maybe it's Messi. Maybe it's somebody else. I have trouble believing that there's a more recognizable athlete than Tiger Woods. And I'm surprised, knowing how much money that he's made in his career, that he's only at number eight. Now, when I say only, he did bank $84 million last year. So he's not going broke or anything like that. But I guess I was just a little bit surprised. You're even more surprised with number nine and number 10. Kirk Cousins comes in at number nine, and Carson Wentz comes in at number 10. Think about all the athletes in all the sports on planet Earth. We're not just talking about a certain age here or a certain sport or a certain part of the world. We're talking about everybody. And Kirk Cousins, Captain Kirk Cousins, is the ninth highest paid athlete last year on planet Earth. How does that hit the ear? And Carson Wentz is 10th. Have you guys noticed that there's a name that you haven't heard so far? Patrick Mahomes. It really surprised me where he falls in on this list. So get comfortable because I'm going to read a couple of more names that fall ahead of Patrick Mahomes that made more money than he did last year if you want to combine his salary with all the endorsement money that he made. Number 11 was Tyson Fury. No surprise, heavyweight champion of the world. Number 12 was Russell Westbrook. Then it was somebody named Lewis Hamilton. Rob, you and I both love sports. I got a cheesy-ass nickname. They call me the sports machine. You would think I know a lot about the subject. What's a Lewis Hamilton?
He is the F1 driver for Mercedes team.
All right, well, that's why we keep you around. And he's super rich, apparently. Number 14, Rory McIlroy. Number 15, Jared Goff. Number 16, Conor McGregor. Number 17, James Harden. Followed by Giannis, Anthony Joshua, and Deontay Wilder. Rounding out the top 20. still haven't heard Pat's name. Anybody surprised? I guess I'm a little bit surprised just with all the endorsements. We know that he didn't break the bank with his contract last year, but also if there's a football player that's in more commercials than Patrick Mahomes, I'd like to see that gentleman. It's not Lamar Jackson. It's not Tom Brady. It's not Deshaun Watson or Carson Wentz. Maybe it's Baker Mayfield. But, I mean, you see Pat in every other commercial, at least during football season, but he's not in the top 20. Number 21 is Tom Brady, followed by Drew Brees, Novak Djokovic, Kyrie Irving, Phil Mickelson, Julio Jones, Rafael Nadal, Klay Thompson, Naomi Osaka. Those are your top 30 highest paid athletes from last year. Again, I told you to get comfortable. Number 31, Canelo, followed by Damian Lillard, Serena, Chris Paul, Grady Jarrett, Paul George, Michael Thomas, Blake Griffin. Now I've gave you half the list.
Have we had a baseball player yet?
Now I've gave you half the list. It's a good point. But they're not very marketable.
Yeah, I mean, that's my point. I mean, we haven't had a baseball player at all.
And that's the top 50 highest athletes in the world. I don't know if your point or my point is actually better now that you bring it up. Not one baseball player and not Patrick Mahomes when we talk about the 50 highest paid athletes combining their salary and their endorsements last year. So I've gave you 50, right? 51, John Wall, followed by Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, Jordan Spieth, Kemba Walker, Zion, Embiid, Devin Booker, Tobias Harris. I could keep going, but if you're curious where Pat falls on this list, he doesn't. Patrick Mahomes last year was somehow not one of the 100 highest paid athletes. And the only reason that surprised me so much is because where's he going to rank on this list next year? I'm not saying he's going to pass Fed. I'm not saying he's going to make over $106 million when you combine his salary and his endorsements. Because to be honest with you, I don't know exactly how much he makes in these endorsements, but I know that he's got a lot of them. I know that if he only makes $10 for each one of these commercials and something tells me he makes a little bit more than that, then he's made a ton of money when it comes to Oakley and Adidas and was it vitamin water or whatever his water is that he pumps, all these different things. I think he could land like top five next year. I think he could be in that LeBron James category where if I'm right and he ends up making, let's call it $43 million as his base salary, well, then all of a sudden, if he makes another 20, 30, 40 off the field, then he's creeping up really quick into that $80 million, $100 million. Think about the type of money that we're talking about. And I know maybe this is not what people want to hear right now if you're furloughed or out of work or getting government checks, but, I mean, that's the truth. The truth is that starting next year, once Pat gets paid, whatever the Chiefs give him, and then you combine that with all of his endorsements, you're talking about a $100 million man. Walking around Kansas City. Think about that. $100 million man. We'll keep talking about Pat and his contract, when and exactly what number we think it's going to land at. But right now, Rob, fire me up some beats and let's take a trip around the NFL.
We start with this. We all believe the Chiefs are going to win the West. Carrington's high on the Broncos. I'm high on the Chargers. Are we underselling the Las Vegas Raiders?
No, we're not underselling the Las Vegas Raiders, and here's why, Rob, because weeks 2 through 7 for Oakland or Los Angeles or Las Vegas or wherever they play these days are a juggernaut where there's a chance that they don't win any of those games, and then all of a sudden, halfway through the season, Oakland's a 2-6 team, and they're already out of it. Check this out. Weeks 2 through 7 for the Raiders, New Orleans, New England, Buffalo, Kansas City, and then Tampa Bay. They're certainly not going to be favored in any of those games. Three of those games are on the road. Again, I'm not saying the Raiders are a terrible football team based on their talent and the talent they've added the last couple of years, because I actually think Mike Mayock's doing a pretty good job. It really just comes down to their quarterback and their coach. I don't believe in Derek Carr or Marcus Mariota, and I'm not a huge believer in John Gruden. So to answer your question, no, I don't think that we're underselling the Raiders. I just don't think the Raiders are a very good football team.
They might squeak out that Patriot win, but even then, that's 3-5. They're done. CBS Sports has Pittsburgh as the most likely landing spot for one Cam Newton. Do you believe that's a good fit for Cam and the Steelers?
I would say, here's the thing, Rob. My dad told me a long time ago, he sat me down and he said, son, he said, in the game of life, there's not always going to be a great choice. He said that. He said, there's not always going to be a great choice. But there's always going to be a best choice. And there's always going to be a most logical choice. And I feel like my dad needs to sit down and have this talk with Cam Newton, which would be really weird. But he needs to hear that, because for Cam Newton right now, the truth is there's not a great choice. He probably thought at some point the right team's going to come along with the right amount of money and he could be a starter and be a good fit with the coach and have a nice offense and maybe play out his career for the last 3 or 4 years and make another, let's call it, 40, 50, 60 million bucks. Well, the league has basically said to him, nah, you know, you might have thought that landing spot was going to be there in Los Angeles with the Chargers, or New England with the Patriots, or Miami with the Dolphins. And then all those teams individually said, nah, we're going with Tua, or we're going with Justin Herbert, or we're going with our guy. And nobody's decided on Cam Newton. Now, I will say I'm a little bit surprised by that. I mean, if you think about the quarterbacks in the league, the starting quarterback, like if we're going to have Jared Stidham be a starting quarterback in the league, you can't tell me that he's a better option than a healthy Cam Newton. The question has come down to, is he a healthy Cam Newton? So Cam's best option here, Rob, is being a backup on a team that essentially has a quarterback that's kind of like him, that plays in a similar system. Well, that would, you could check the box there with Ben Roethlisberger. And on top of that, Roethlisberger is often injured. Last year, he only played in, what, part of one game and then came out, and that was it. So there's a chance that happens again, and he's getting old. And then all of a sudden, Cam Newton's playing on a good team with a good coach in a system that he's comfortable with. So, yeah, I actually think that it makes a ton of sense in the world. Now, he's going to have to humble himself because Cam thinks he's a starter. There are a couple of guys in the league that you can think of as a fan that are good, like really good players, but not nearly as good as they make themselves out to be. Cam Newton, number one. Jadeveon Clowney, number two. And what do those guys have in common? They're both still looking for a job. So at some point, you have to recognize not how good you think you are, but how good does everybody else actually think you are? I do think that Pittsburgh makes a lot of sense for Cam Newton.
Sam Munson said it on the show earlier. He's looking for a starting job. There's no market for that. There's no starting job available. So I agree with you. He didn't humble himself and go back up somewhere. Barring injury, he's in the same spot he is today a year from now. He's going to have to retire because a year away from football, no one's going to want him.
What other starter gets hurt more than Ben Roethlisberger? Because that's what I would – Matthew Stafford?
I do believe that that's a good spot if he's willing to take a backup role.
Is it Stafford? Because that's that, – like honestly, it's a really –
Stafford.
It's a bad way to look at things, but if you're trying to get a starting job, the best way to do that is to have the starting quarterback get injured early. Maybe you go be Detroit's backup. Maybe you go be Pittsburgh's backup and take your chances. It's kind of cryptic to think that way, but if you're Cam Newton – unfortunately, it's kind of what you have to do.
Maybe Sam Darnold will get chicken pox this year and he'll have some time with the Jets.
That's actually not that ridiculous.
I thought mono would be ridiculous, but here we sit. DeAndre Hopkins says he's the best wide receiver in the NFL. Sean, is he on your top five wide receivers list in the NFL?
Top five? Of course he's in my top five, Rob. I would say he's number two.
Number two
on my top five list. I would go, and you know I'm always down for a good list. I would go number five, Keenan Allen. And I think that Keenan Allen has a chance to really hit his stride the next couple of years if Justin Herbert is that dude. We know Justin Herbert's got a really good arm. At number four, I'm still going to say Julio Jones. I mean, look at his numbers. The weird thing about Julio Jones is he's got the same thing that Travis Kelce has, where if you just want to go by the catches and the yards, well, then he's probably the best of all time. And then you look at the touchdowns, you're like, ugh. Julio Jones only has one season with double-digit touchdowns. Travis Kelce only has one season with double-digit touchdowns. That's when he caught 10 a couple of years ago. As good as these dudes are and rack up all these catches and yards, they don't get across the goal line as often as you would think. But Julio Jones certainly still a top five wide receiver. Give me Tyreek Hill at number three. When we had on Sam Munson of Pro Football Focus, I was asking him to compare Tyreek Hill to DeAndre Hopkins, and he basically said, well, they're so different, it's hard to do. Tyreek Hill is the most unique wide receiver in the game, if you think about it. His breakaway speed, the way he cuts on a dime, he's a good route runner. And the thing that's improved the most the last couple of years are his hands. Remember in the Tennessee playoff game a couple of years ago? There were a couple of passes that Tyreek Hill just flat out dropped. He doesn't really do that anymore. So I'm going to say Tyreek Hill comes in at number three. I told you, number two, DeAndre Hopkins. And I think that he's going to be as good, if not better. Kyler Murray throws a really, really nice deep ball down there in Arizona. And then number one, Michael Thomas. A lot of it is the situation that you play in, the coach and the quarterback, which is why Tyreek Hill benefits a lot playing with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Same thing with Michael Thomas in a pass-happy offense down there in New Orleans with Sean Payton and Drew Brees. So give me Keenan Allen, Julio Jones, Tyreek Hill, DeAndre Hopkins, and Michael Thomas, Rob. There you go. My top five best wide receivers in the NFL.
I just want to point out, you have Keenan Allen at five. He plays for my Chargers. You are welcome aboard the Charger bandwagon. If you believe they have a top five wide receiver and just an okay quarterback with a really good defense, you might want to start buying into the Chargers. There's plenty of stock available.
A really good defensive line. I love their defensive line. Do they have a really good defense? You said that, not me.
I think they have the best defense in the division.
Trying to think. Is that true?
It's either them or the Chiefs.
No, that's probably Denver.
Oh, their defense is more talented than Denver.
I would say Kansas City or we know who's the worst. I would say it's Oakland.
Yeah, Oakland.
Or Vegas, wherever the hell they are. You could debate 1, 2, and 3 if you want to. You could really get into a good debate with that. Look, if you want to tell me it's Kansas City, as I had puberty there on the radio, if you want to tell me that it's the Chiefs, I'll go with that. I think the Chiefs have the benefit of last year. They can look back and say, well, what happened when we had time? What happened the second half of the season? Once Spags wasn't new and Honey Badger wasn't new and Frank Clark was healthy and Chris Jones got back. Like, once everybody was on the field and they got used to a new scheme as well, then they were a top five defense. So, yeah, I switch. Chiefs best defense in the division, not the Chargers second. You're crazy. You're high or something. But they're better than the Raiders. Chiefs defense best in the West. Broncos second, followed by the Chargers and the Raiders. Whoop! Whoop!
I was going to keep offering Charger stock all summer long. You guys eventually going to smarten up and buy some.
No, I'm not buying.
Ian Rappaport was asked about the possibility of Antonio Brown being back in 2020.
Probably at some point. Now, there's, you know, some things that need to happen. We still need to figure out if he's going to be suspended. I think that will be one thing. You know, we don't know. Because remember, he's got allegations of sexual assault and rape. Civil allegations, but allegations nonetheless. You know, he's got some serious things he's kind of dealing with right now. So much so that I remember a couple months ago, Roger Goodell had said very publicly that he hopes he gets some help rather than talk about the possible punishments. So there's things that need to be sorted out before he gets on the field. I will say this about AB. You know, I'm sure Russell Wilson wants him. I would imagine Lamar Jackson likes great receivers, and he probably would want him too. This is not a quarterback decision. It's not even really a coach or GM decision. It's really an owner decision.
Sean, do you agree with Ian Rappaport? Will Antonio Brown be on an NFL roster by the start of the 2020 football season?
Yeah, I do agree with him. I think that he will probably be on a roster because I think that there's a team that's maybe on the border or at least thinks they're on the border of making the playoffs that goes, yeah, Antonio Brown's our guy. What type of a team am I talking about? I'm talking about a team like the Raiders. Oh, yeah, that's already happened. Okay, I'm talking about a team like the Patriots. So, yeah, that's already happened. Okay, I'm talking about a borderline playoff team here that he could help. Okay, I'm talking about a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Oh yeah. Forgot about that, and that's where he started. I'm talking about a borderline playoff team here, Rob, that he could help. Like, I don't know, a team like Cleveland. No, they probably don't want to do that. Now that I'm talking it out, I think that he's got to find a perfect situation because it's got to be for a team that's probably not that good, that's not going anywhere, that thinks that he's the missing piece. But then at the same time, you can't have a locker room that's combustible. And there are a lot of those. You think about Dallas. You think about a place like Cleveland. You think about the Jets a couple of years ago. Like, if you get the spark, then all of a sudden you could have a fire. And we know that Antonio Brown could be that dude. But if you're a team like Cincinnati that's on the come up with a young quarterback that could use a frontline wide receiver, or if you're a team like Miami, for example, that could use a frontline wide receiver with a young quarterback, whoever they end up going with, well, then maybe you try Antonio Brown because what do you have to lose? If you're like a 6 or 7 win football team and you think we get him and he could take us to the playoffs, then I think it's worth it. But if you're a team like Kansas City or Baltimore and you're you're completely established, what's the point? When you've got a locker room like that and you've already got a bunch of weapons, I don't think that a really good team is going to sign Antonio Brown. I think it's going to take the right team, Rob, to sign Antonio Brown. But it's not a numbers thing at all. I mean, the last time that we saw Antonio Brown, the guy had 1,400 yards and 15 touchdowns, and he didn't even play the last week of the season. And he had a 3 or 4 year stretch where he averaged 15 touchdowns and 1,500 yards. So I'm not saying that whoever gets Antonio Brown should expect that type of production, but let's not pretend like he wasn't elite the last time that we saw him. I mean, I made the list earlier who I think are the five best wide receivers in the NFL. For like a 5, 6, 7 year stretch, Antonio Brown would have been on every single one of those lists, and there's a chance that he still is. I feel like he's one of those guys where when he comes back, you don't really know what you're going to get. Most of the time, when an athlete either retires or goes away for a certain period of time, you can point to him and say, yeah, your best days are behind you. I mean, we appreciate you coming back and trying to entertain us, but how valuable are you really going to be? Most of the time, like a Jason Witten, for example, did anybody think that when he came out of the booth all of a sudden he was going to turn into Travis Kelce? No, we knew what he was going to be. With Antonio Brown, do we? I'm really not sure that we do, because the last time that we saw him, well, technically the last time that we saw him on the football field was that one game he played for the Patriots, but he found himself in the end zone. He did score. And then, like I said, the season before that, he was second in the league in receiving yards and first in touchdowns. So he didn't just get that old that quick. So again, if it's the right team and the right situation, I personally would take a flyer on Antonio Brown, but if I'm a proven team, if I've got locker room chemistry, we know this guy could screw it up really, really quick. So I talked a lot just to say that, yes, I do think he's going to end up, Rob, on an NFL roster. I just don't know exactly which one it's going
to
be.
I think Rapoport said something interesting there. He said it comes down to an owner decision. So I was sitting here thinking about like the owners that I think would take a risk on a guy like Antonio Brown. Jerry Jones would be that kind of owner. He does not need a wide receiver. He has plenty of wide receivers in Dallas. Mark Davis, that kind of owner. We know for a fact he's not going back there. Arthur Blank, that's the kind of owner I could see making taking a risk. Doesn't need a wide receiver. We know Bob McNair is not going to do it. There was another one I was thinking of, like big. Oh, Robert Kraft, another owner you could see taking a risk on a guy like this.
Took a risk. Didn't work.
Yeah, that's the problem. If it's an owner decision, so many of the owners are very conservative and don't want to, you know, take a player who could cause a big controversy or a hoopla at minicamp and training camp and et cetera. They won't touch him. The ones you think, oh, they might take a risk on him, are already set at the position and or have taken a risk and already been burned.
It just takes one, though. That's the thing. I always say that about Tim Tebow. Like, somebody decided that Tim Tebow should have been drafted in the first round. And if the Broncos weren't that team, he might not have been drafted at all. That's what I always come back to. It only takes one.
It's true.
So it only takes one team that goes, well, yeah, we'll take a shot at Antonio Brown. We know that it's not going to be, in all likelihood, Cleveland or the Raiders, or the Patriots, or the Steelers. You can eliminate the really, really good teams. Like, it's not going to be the 49ers. It's not going to be a team like New Orleans. It's not going to be the Chiefs. It's not going to be Baltimore. But there's like 20 other teams still that could say, yeah, Antonio Brown makes us.
Baltimore wouldn't shock me, by the way.
Baltimore, I guess, is that one team. But their locker room's just so good.
It's them or Seattle for a team I think he'll land with. So I would actually say no. You know what? I'll bet you that lunch you owe me, he doesn't start with a team in training camp.
Well, I'm not paying you that lunch either way. Sorry. That's Rob Brenton. I'm the Sports Machine. Now it's your turn. If you want to play a game of pick a player, let's be honest. I got three games in my life that I absolutely love. Battleship, Mousetrap, and Pick a Player. If you want to be a contestant against Vern on Pick a Player, dial me up right now at 913-576-7610. Once again, the number is 913-576-7610. If you want to compete against Vern on Pick a Player, now is your chance. Dial me up. It's coming up next right here on The Drive.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.